What was the most significant date of the 20th century? The answer to that is June 28, 1914, which was the assassination of the Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand, which began World War I, which has often been called the war to end all war. And it was, in the words of one author who wrote a book with this title, the end of order. Every single conflict on the face of the earth today can be traced back directly to June 28, 1914, without exception. After a conflict that lasted more than 4 years and resulted in more deaths than any previous conflict, there followed the Treaty of Versailles. Field Marshal Earl Wavell described this as the peace to end all peace. And since then, we've had never-ending war. Something started with World War I that continues to this day. Just a couple of weeks ago, Montenegro became the world's latest new country. It's a trend that began with World War I. Before World War I, the great empires existed, but with World War I, you had the rise of something that we could refer to as nationalism or ethnicity. The desire of every tribe to have its own independence, to have its own government, to have its own nation. And this is why the number of countries in the world keeps on increasing. Because each country that is created is made up of two or three different tribal entities. And then one of the other tribes will want its independence. And so we keep on having more and more nations being created. Look at Judges chapter 21 and verse 25, because there's another trend that started with World War I, and that trend is something that reminds us of ancient Israel. The very last verse of the book of Judges says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. There was chaos and confusion, in other words. And that certainly has been the result of what happened in World War I. Remember again the title of the book, The End of Order. Before World War I, you had order. People understood their place in society. Nations understood that they were a part of a great empire that spanned the globe. There were five great empires that dominated the world. And people understood their place within those empires. But since World War I, we haven't had that same kind of order. And you've had, all these different groups that want to break away and have their independence, and they rebel against whatever government they've got. So we have never-ending chaos and confusion and violence. In the Wall Street Journal just a few days ago, the 2nd of June, there was an article titled The Akaka State, with a question mark. The last time we wrote about the Native Hawaiian Government Reorganization Act in July 2005, we called it secessionist, unconstitutional, and un-American. And that was being kind. Our view of the bill, which, like Freddy Krueger, refuses to die, hasn't changed. That Hawaii would break away from the United States if this bill is passed. It opens up a Pandora's box of possible future problems, with every ethnic group in the United States wanting independence. That may seem far-fetched, but it's exactly what happened to the Soviet Union in the 1990s. You know, every ethnic group wanted to break away and form its own country, and many of them did. In Matthew chapter 24, there's an interesting verse which it would create a sovereign government similar to existing Indian tribes for the roughly 400,000 people who identify themselves as Native Hawaiians. The Akaka Bill, named after its Hawaiian Senate sponsor, Daniel Akaka, allows for the complete legal and territorial independence from the United States and the reestablishment of an Hawaiian nation state. In other words, the beginning of the breakup of the United States. And this is the concern of the Wall Street Journal. Helps us understand what's going on here at this time in which we live. Matthew 24 is one of those important chapters on Bible prophecy. Here Jesus Christ was asked by the disciples, what would be the sign of the end of the age and of your coming? And he says in verse 4, take heed that no man deceive you. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. So many wars. See that you are not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. Now, the word nation here is the Greek word ethnos, from which we get our word ethnic. Ethnic conflict is different from conflict between nations, as we see in this verse. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. So ethnos against ethnos, kingdom against kingdom. A kingdom is a political entity, like the United States, or Britain, or Canada, or Russia. But nation has a different meaning. It is ethnos, an ethnic group. So ethnic conflict was going to be a major problem in the time of the end, which is what this chapter is about. And that's what I want to talk about today. Nation shall rise against nation. Ethnos against ethnos. Because this verse underlies an important aspect of biblical prophecy, which we in the West tend not to see. And that is the importance of tribalism. Because we've had a multicultural society for a few decades, the emphasis has been on multiculturalism, we've downplayed the importance of tribalism. But tribalism is actually a very important component in conflict around the world. It is a very important factor in Iraq and Afghanistan, where we are fighting two wars. And because we don't understand tribalism in Western society, we don't fully understand the conflicts in those countries, and of course that has led us into making all kinds of different mistakes. But tribalism is very much a factor. In the Balkans 10 years ago, remember we had a lot of wars in the Balkans, and they went on for about 10 years. All of those were due to tribalism. The Serbs and the Croats don't like each other. The Bosnians and the Serbs don't like each other. And the Croats and the Bosnians don't like each other. You know, everybody was falling out with everybody else. There was a lot of conflict. Religion was also a factor. Often each tribe has its own religious affiliation. The Serbs, for example, are Orthodox Christians. The Croats, Catholics. The Bosnians, Muslims. So again, there's a religious element there. But the conflict is a conflict that goes back hundreds of years or even thousands of years and still exists. Quite often, because of the, I spend a lot of time in Africa, a lot of people mention the movie Hotel Rwanda, which again is all about tribalism. One third of the countries in Africa right now are fighting civil wars, which all have their origins in tribalism. Each tribe hates the other tribes. Dick Sims mentioned slavery. Slavery goes back to tribalism. Before the Europeans arrived in Africa, slavery was already being practiced. One tribe would capture men from another tribe or women and sell them as slaves. And it was a thriving business which the Europeans simply capitalized on when they arrived in Africa. So tribalism is very important, and we have downplayed it, and it makes it difficult for us to understand what is happening in the world. Now let's look at one tribe, for example. Muhammad believed that the Arabs, the peoples in what is now Saudi Arabia, are descended from Ishmael, Abraham's other son, by his wife's handmaid Hagar. Muhammad saw Islam as the religion of the Arabs, just as Judaism was the religion of the Jews. If you want a good book on Muhammad's life, which helps you to understand this tribal connection with Ishmael, read Muhammad by Karen Armstrong. In fact, specifically, pages 161 and 212 of the paperback edition of the book. Look at Genesis chapter 16, because there's a prophecy regarding Ishmael. I would think that Muhammad must have known of this prophecy because the book of Genesis was certainly written before Muhammad lived in the 7th century A.D. But in Genesis chapter 16 and verse 11, we read this prophecy, verses 11 and 12. The angel of the Lord said to Hagar, behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction. he shall be a wild man. And in the time of Muhammad, the peoples in the Arab world were known for being wild. All the different tribes in the Arab world were constantly fighting each other. It was Muhammad who actually united them with a common religion, the religion of Islam. He shall be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. Well, again, here, this particular tribe is mentioned. And we see in the Bible that many tribes are mentioned. And many of those tribes and the prophecies relating to them apply to the end time. So tribalism is still an important factor. And something, again, which our culture tends to put down. We don't think it's very important. Who are Ishmael's brethren? It says he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. Well, the Israelites and their descendants, through Isaac, you know, Isaac was the other brother, and this rivalry between Isaac's descendants and Ishmael has gone on for centuries. The Israelites and their descendants, of whom the Jews were just one tribe, the tribe of Judah, Ishmael's brethren. This is a prophecy that applies very much today when Ishmaelites, Arabs, are living around the world, mostly in the Western nations, the white English-speaking countries, and France. That's where most of the Arabs have dispersed to throughout the world, the United States, Canada, Britain, Australia, New Zealand, and also France. In fact, there's more in France than in any other single country outside of the Middle East. Now, what about the other tribes of Israel? Remember, after King Solomon, the 12 tribes divided into two nations, Israel and Judah. Judah kept David's royal line, but was made up of just two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. Their descendants comprise the nation of Israel today. The other 10 tribes were taken into captivity by the Assyrians in the 8th century BC and disappeared. Yet Bible prophecy shows that they also still play a role. Look at Genesis chapter 49. Genesis chapter 49 is a very important chapter in this context because it tells us what would befall each of the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, we don't have time to look at all the tribes, so we're really just going to look at two of the tribes here. In verse 1 of chapter 49, Jacob, or Israel, called his sons together and said, "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel, your father." Now here all 12 tribes are mentioned. But again, let's just notice two of them. One is easy to identify. You know, most of the world would agree on this. The other one is one of the lost tribes. In verse 8, Judah, "You are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you." Your father's children are who? Well, the Ishmaelites. So the Arabs will bow down before you. Now, you know, did this ever happen in the ancient world? Up to a point it did a little bit because you have some of the tribes in that area, but the Ishmaelites moved primarily further south. But, this prophecy is more for the end time. It does say in verse 1, "In the last days, your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you've gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him?" You know, everybody was afraid of lions, and in the same way, this is a description of Judah's great military might. You know, that certainly was not the case in the ancient world. You know, Judah has become a major military power today. And we're talking about the Jewish nation of Israel today. There are only like 5 million Jews in Israel, 5.2 million. And, they were able to hold at bay 300 or 400 million Arabs. And, they succeeded. They won every single war that they fought. So they've been quite an incredible military force. "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes." You know, a reference to the Messiah. And to him shall be the obedience of the people. So, again, this is an end time prophecy relating to Judah. There is another reference to the Messiah further down when another son of Israel is mentioned, and that is Joseph in verse 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. But his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. So again, another reference to the Messiah. Now Matthew Henry's commentary describes verse 22 as the blessings of Joseph, which are very large and full. These verses relate to the last days and show that Joseph would be playing a major role, certainly amongst the tribes of Israel. And yet as far as the world is concerned, Joseph has disappeared. Joseph doesn't exist. So a lot of Bible scholars try to fit these prophecies here into the ancient world and look for their fulfillment in the tribes of Israel 3,000 years ago. And yet they were not fulfilled in the tribes of Israel 3,000 years ago. And here we see a prophecy relating to the last days. Joseph is a fruitful bough in verse 22, a fruitful bough by a well. And, of course, further down it does say his bow in verse 24 remained in strength. The arms of his hand were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. You know, a reference to military power and military conflict. Just as in verse 9 we saw Judah described as a lion's whelp. And he bows down, he lies down as a lion, just waiting to pounce, you know, just waiting to attack, waiting really for, you know, the victim to come by, so to speak. So again, you see this prophecy relating to these two military powers, Judah and Joseph. Now, in order to understand more about Joseph, we have to go back to Genesis chapter 48. So let's do that for a moment. Genesis chapter 48, and again, we're looking at the importance of tribalism and prophecies relating to the different tribes. And the purpose of this is to help you to, you know, start thinking in tribal terms when you look in the Bible and you look at the prophecies and understand that these tribes are still relevant to the world of today. Genesis chapter 48, beginning in verse 8, says, Israel saw Joseph's sons and said, who are these? Now remember, Joseph had been taken into captivity. He ended up in Egypt and then rose to great prominence, became the prime minister of Egypt. He married and he had two children. And here now is where Israel, Joseph's father, who had long thought him dead, is now going to bless the two sons of Joseph. Joseph was one of his favorite sons. The two youngest, Joseph and Benjamin, were. Who are these? And Joseph said to his father, they are my sons, whom God has given me in this place. And he said, please bring them to me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. Then Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, but in fact God has also shown me your offspring. I hadn't expected to see you, Joseph, let alone your offspring. So Joseph brought them from beside his knees, and he bowed down with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near him. So it's very carefully described, very in great minute detail here. Then Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Now let's understand that point here. Let my name be named upon them. His name was Israel. When most people today read in the Bible prophecies about Israel, they automatically think of the nation in the Middle East that is called Israel. But that nation is just the tribe of Judah. It is the Jews. here he's saying to Joseph that, and to Joseph's sons, that his name should be named on them. So Joseph's sons were Israel, and many of those prophecies apply to the descendants of Joseph and not to the Jews. I mean, some also apply to the Jews because the Jews were a part of Israel. Israel was 12 tribes. And after the death of King Solomon, 10 of those tribes broke away from the kingdom that was ruled by Solomon's descendant. And so you ended up with the kingdom of Judah, which was the Jews and Benjamin. And then the other 10 tribes formed their own kingdom, the kingdom of Israel. And here is a prophecy now where Israel is saying, let my name be named upon them. Now when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. So he took hold of his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. You know, it displeased him because normally the oldest child got the bulk of the birthright. So it displeased him. So he removed his father's hand. But then Joseph said to his father, not so, my father. For this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel will bless, saying, may God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And thus he said Ephraim before Manasseh. Now what is interesting is, you know, most Bible scholars, in fact most churches, just dismiss all of this like it's irrelevant. And yet it obviously wasn't irrelevant because it goes into great detail as to exactly where he placed his hands and who he blessed, and goes into the fact that his name, the name of Israel, was to be given to them. So these were two brothers who were destined to become a multitude of nations and a great people, or one nation. This prophecy was not fulfilled in ancient Israel, nor is it being fulfilled in Israel today. Israel is a small country. It may be quite powerful in the Middle East, but it's not a global power. It's not a major nation in the context of world history. And really, when you look at history, only two nations can possibly have fulfilled this role. And that is the British Empire, which was a multitude of nations, and the United States of America, which went on to become the greatest single nation. Let my name be named on them, Israel. So when most people today read a prophecy of Israel, they automatically think of a small country in the Middle East, which really is Judah. So in order for us to understand Bible prophecy, again, we have to understand the identity of the tribes. And we have to understand that Israel and Judah are separate in modern times, and this is emphasized. Look at Hosea chapter 5. Hosea chapter 5. Understanding identities and understanding tribal affiliations and descent helps us understand Bible prophecy and helps us understand individually where we are now, because we all trace our ancestry back to a tribe. Now, we live in a multicultural society today that downplays the importance of that. But it's interesting. When I go to Africa, everybody identifies by the tribe. Everybody. Doesn't matter who you ask. You ask somebody, you know, where they're from, and they tell you, you know, their tribal origin, whatever tribe they come from. In a capital city like Accra in Ghana, you've got lots of different tribes living together. When you go out in the rural areas, usually it's just one tribe in each village. You know, a tribe will occupy a big area. Maybe there's 100 or even 1,000 villages. And that is their traditional land. It belongs to the tribe. So, you know, the tribe is still the same. It is the same ethnic group as was there 100 years ago, or even 1,000 years ago. In the big cities, though, you've had people come together from different tribal areas, and they kind of all get mushed together, but they still identify by the tribe. That's the way that they identify themselves, more even than their nation. So they don't identify themselves as Nigerians or Ghanaians. They say, I'm an Ewe, or I'm a Hausa, or I'm a Yoruba, or I'm an Igbo. They give their tribal identity. And that is true throughout Africa. It is true throughout Asia. It is true, really, in Europe. They don't use the word tribe in Europe. but they still identify ethnically as Germans or French or English or whatever. And, you know, again, every ethnic group wants its own little country. Just a few years ago, Czechoslovakia broke up into two countries. The Czechs became one country, the Czech Republic. The Slovaks became another country, Slovakia. And so you get this constantly happening as each ethnic group breaks away. Look at Hosea chapter 5, because there's a prophecy here, which again we cannot understand without understanding the identity of the different tribes today. In Hosea chapter 5, beginning in verse 5, it says, "The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Judah also stumbles with them. With their flocks and herds they shall go to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them. They have dealt treacherously with the Lord, for they have begotten pagan children." Children that don't believe, in other words, they don't worship the true God. "Now a new moon shall devour them and their heritage." A new moon is 30 days. So here we see a prophecy that prophesies the fall of Israel, Ephraim, and Judah within a period of 30 days. That's all. "A new moon shall devour them and their heritage." Just a 30-day period. This has never happened before. It never happened in the ancient world. In the 8th century B.C., the 10 tribes of Israel, the nation of Israel, as distinct from the nation of Judah, was taken into captivity by the Assyrians. It was over 100 years before the nation of Judah, the Jews and the Benjamites, were taken into captivity by the Babylonians. A different empire conquered them. So, you know, this was not fulfilled back then. It has never been fulfilled. It is still a prophecy regarding the future. And what we see here is interesting, because Judah, that is the Jews in the Middle East, the Jewish nation, and Ephraim, which is the multitude of nations, or I should say what is left of Ephraim, which basically is just, you know, the British, the Australians, Canadians, both fall at the same time within that same 30-day period. Who could Israel be? Well, remember, Israel said to Joseph's sons, or to Joseph, "Let my name be named on them." He was talking about Joseph's sons. "Let my name be named on them." So Israel's name was to be placed upon them. The chief nation of Israel today is the United States. You know, the tribe of Manasseh, the great single nation that was prophesied. Remember, he said Ephraim before Manasseh. Ephraim, the multitude of nations, came first. The British Empire was the greatest power before the United States became the greatest power. So here it's a prophecy relating to the the United States, the remnant of the British Commonwealth, and also Judah, the Jews in the Middle East. What is also interesting is that since September the 11th, for the first time ever in history, these three nations have been on the same side. So it was something that couldn't even have been fulfilled until the last 4 or 5 years. And it's happened by accident. The British, the Americans, and the Israelis are on the same side in this conflict with the Middle East. They're basically working together on terrorism, and you know, it never happened before. And there's still no actual alliance, but the three nations work together. They have a common interest, if you like, and it's interesting that this prophecy says, "A new moon shall devour them and their heritage." And if I could just mention, just referring back to the sermonette, notice in verse 7 it says, "They have begotten pagan children." Pagans are non-believers. You know, the Israelites knew who the true God was. And what did we hear in the sermonette today? You know, we heard that, you know, here is a generation now that just has no concept of God's laws, of God or his laws. You know, it's frightening when you see it. But, you know, people don't even understand about, you know, the biblical custom of marriage, which was very much a part of our culture right up until the 1970s. You know, and it's really changed in the last 30 years. And, you know, God just doesn't recognize the children. In other words, it says in the Old King James, for they have begotten strange children. But, you know, pagan is actually a better translation. Non-believers is what it means here. So Israel, Ephraim, and Judah all fall in the same 30 days, and this was never fulfilled in ancient times. By the way, Manasseh means causing to forget, a very apt description of the United States. I'll go back to Genesis 49. Genesis chapter 49. Again, what I'm trying to leave you with is a concept of the importance of tribal identity and tribal affiliation. You know, as Christians, we are spiritual Israelites, and no matter what tribes people are, I mean, I work with people of different tribes in Africa, and, you know, we all learn to work together very successfully, and we should be able to do that as Christians, but it doesn't downplay the fact that tribal identity is still important to most people. And I can just leave Genesis 49 for a moment. Keep your finger in there. I want to turn to Psalm 83. I added this morning. And got a little footnote here. I want to turn here again, showing the importance of tribal identity. Because here is a prophecy, which again was not fulfilled in ancient times. It was partially fulfilled. It's a prophecy regarding a conspiracy against Israel. How the different nations were to come against Israel. Now, it happened against Judah in ancient times. There's an account of it in 2 Chronicles. I've forgotten the chapter. But in Psalm 83, we see a lot of nations mentioned here. And it's felt that the prophecy relates more to the end time, because some of these nations were not involved way back when it first happened. So behold, in verse 2, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up their heads. They've taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. Here is, you know, an appeal to God here regarding these nations. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. You know, there's an intense hatred towards Israel, you know, which is getting worse. You know, those of us who travel to different countries know that. It's just getting worse. The attitude towards Israel, and by Israel, I don't just mean the Jews in the Middle East, but the United States and Britain as well. So they're saying, come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. Remember, the president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, is calling not only for the total annihilation of Israel, but also the destruction of the United States and Britain. For they have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy against you, which again is another development that we're seeing, because it's not just Islamic countries that are coming together against us, but even the Russians, the Chinese, and so on, doing things against us. The tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites. You know, the Ishmaelites, again, the Arabs are included there. Moab and the Hagrites. Gebal, Ammon, and Amalek. Philistia with the inhabitants of Tyre. Assyria also has joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot. So we see this confederation, these different nations that come against Israel at the end time. And again, you see, it's always tribes that are mentioned. Tribal identity. These tribes. You know, people identify more than anything with their ethnic group, with their tribal origin. And that is certainly true in most countries in the world. Now go to Genesis chapter 49 and verse 22. In order for us to understand the world in which we live today, we need to understand what it says here. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. The archers, you know, there's been a lot of opposition militarily to Joseph. Have bitterly grieved him. Archers also fire from a distance. So the implication here is that the wars have been, you know, at a distance. And it's interesting that most of the wars that have been fought by Joseph, by the United States and Britain, have been fought overseas, not on home territory. And certainly that would fit here. And again, it doesn't fit with any of the other nations, with the Jews, for example. But his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. So, you know, that strength has come from God at the fulfillment of prophecy. Now, James Truslow Adams was an American historian who lived in the first part of the 20th century. He died in 1948. He was considered America's preeminent historian in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And in 1940, he wrote A History of the British Empire, in which he wrote these words, which are very prophetic words about the world in which we live today. And they help us understand the world in which we're in right now. He wrote, different peoples may have different ideals of government, but for those who have been accustomed to freedom of press and of spirit, the possible overthrow of the British Empire would be a catastrophe scarcely thinkable. Not only would it leave a vacuum over a quarter of the globe, into which all the wild winds of anarchy, despotism, and spiritual oppression could rush, but the strongest bulwark outside ourselves for our own safety and freedom would have been destroyed. So it's a very prophetic paragraph. It's the last paragraph in his book, showing the consequences of the end of the British Empire, that all over the world you would have chaos and confusion, which is exactly what has happened. Iraq and Afghanistan, for example, and all these different conflicts in Africa, in Darfur, for example, in the Sudan. The Sudan was a part of the British Empire. So all of these things have come upon us in the last 60 years. As we have turned progressively away from God, so our problems have mounted and continue to mount. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy chapter 28. Again, this is an important chapter because Deuteronomy 28 applies to the people of Israel. And what did Israel say to Joseph about his sons? Let my name be named on them. So if we are Israel, then Deuteronomy 28 applies to us. And in Deuteronomy 28, we see the blessings and cursings chapter. Blessings promised for obedience, cursings which follow naturally from disobedience, from rejecting the laws of God. And what it comes down to is this, you know, the more laws of God we keep, the more blessed we're going to be, the more laws of God we break, the more we suffer the negative consequences. That is true in our own personal lives, as well as a nation. And, you know, we are now going through a period where there has been a rejection of God's laws. Let's have a look at Deuteronomy 28, just a few verses here. It shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth. Which is exactly what happened during the period of religious zeal, the desire to take the gospel into all the world. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, because you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, blessed shall you be in the country. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your ground, the increase of your herd, the increase of your cattle, the offspring of your flocks. In verse 7, the Lord will cause your enemies who rise against you to be defeated before your face. They shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. Verse 10, then all peoples of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you. And then you go down to verse 15, but it shall come to pass if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes which I command you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the country. Cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body. I read something really disturbing this week in the New Republic magazine. It was an article explaining the mindset of the president of Iran and his followers, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And I was writing an article for the Good News. The title of the article is Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Messiah or Madman. And I went into the religious beliefs that are motivating the Iranians in coming against the United States. And, one thing that comes out in there is the Iranians. And in fact, all the peoples of the Middle East, not just the Iranians, but also the Arabs, see us as a sunset power, meaning we're on our way out, like the sunset, on our way down. You know, the sun drops on the horizon. They see themselves, the Iranians and also the Arab countries, as sunrise powers. They're rising to greatness and preeminence. And one reason for this is because there are four times as many young Islamic males in the world today as there are young males in the Western countries. And why is that? Well, it comes back to our immorality, basically. It comes back, I mean, partly, obviously, birth control plays a role here. It's practiced in the West, but it's not practiced in most societies in the world. But it also comes back to our immorality. There's a scripture in Hosea about how immoral the people of Ephraim would be in the end time. And it says that, you know, they're always having sexual relations, but they have no children. And that basically describes our society today. You know, obsessed with sex, but at the same time, you know, not reproducing. And there's four times as many young Islamic males. So they feel that, you know, they're bound to win. That's what's, you know, pushing them forward, encouraging them. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your land, the increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flocks. You go further down to verse 43 and 44. It says, the alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, but you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Verse 25, the Lord will cause you to be defeated before your enemies. You shall go out one way against them, and flee seven ways before them, and you shall become troublesome to all the kingdoms of the earth. You know, which has pretty much happened. We become troublesome because, you know, nobody really wants to be in association with us or allied to us because of the negative consequences. Again, just go back to Genesis 16 and verse 12, the passage about the Ishmaelites. The Ishmaelites, the Arab peoples today, and look at what this says about the Ishmaelites in Genesis 16 and verse 12. He shall be a wild man, his hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. You know, one of the consequences of our lack of, you know, having lots of children is the fact that we've opened our doors to so many others, and of course a lot of people from the Middle East have come in. He shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. And the Israelis have a bigger problem than we do in that sense, because some of their territories were conquered from the Palestinians, and so they've got a major problem in this respect. But, you know, I think we're going to see, terrorism here just the same as they've experienced it there, too. So, these passages apply to the different nations today and to their descendants, because tribal identity, again, is very important even today. It's not something which has just gone away. I mentioned the book, The End of Order. Every conflict in the world today owes its origins to the assassination of the Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand on June 28, 1914. Every single war, including those in Iraq and Afghanistan. You look at Iraq, for example. Iraq did not exist before 1914. When you have the assassination of the Austrian Archduke, it led directly to the war between the Germanic-speaking or the German-speaking countries and the Anglo-Saxon nations. And Turkey allied itself with the Germans. And Turkey, the Ottoman Empire, or the Turks, ruled all of the Middle East. So that included Palestine, it included Iraq. And because they chose the wrong side, that empire just fell apart after World War I. And new nations like Iraq and Israel eventually came into existence. And, as a result of that, we see these conflicts. And those conflicts go on and on and on. So all of this underscores the importance of tribes in biblical prophecy, especially during the last 90 years, as ethnicity has been an increasingly important factor in global conflicts. In Matthew 24 and verse 7, again, we'll just finish there where we began. In Matthew 24 and verse 7, for ethnos will rise against ethnos, for ethnic group will rise against ethnic group, and kingdom against kingdom. Again, kingdom is a political entity which is different from ethnic groups. Most of the conflicts in the world tend to be within a border, civil wars between ethnic groups. And then it continues to describe other things that would happen at the end time as well. But nation will rise against nation. And to help us understand that, we need to look at some of these passages and try to understand the tribal identity of some of these nations.